upon my first trip to Chicago, Illinois, I was there for about 2 days for an important interview. I was sitting around some of our faith's best ministers and theologians and writers, and I, at this point, was just some kid from college interviewing to get into seminary. I got a question from Mike Hoag. Now, at the time, I didn't realize that this guy was really going to put it to me for the next 4 years. So I should have seen something coming when he asked this. As a Unitarian Universalist, how would you describe our faith as a food? I was not prepared for food-based questions in this moment. I wasn't prepared to do anything of the sort, and so I just sat there in this darkened room in a January afternoon as we sat in the sunroom, hearing the sirens go by, hearing the people walk in the neighborhood. As a food. I'm going to have to get back to you on that. Eventually, I came around to thinking of a stew that my family made, one that has given us strength and warmth for years, but no one can say is a good-tasting sort of stew. It's just what it is. Often, our faith is like that, something that we lose track of but get used to. I talked about this stew and how it pulled many different fragrances and tastes together. You probably have something like this in your home. If it sits for a day or two, it tastes better than it does when it's first made. It's important to let it rest and then see how things change. I got by with whatever answer I gave Mike Hoag, this professor of theology who many people in liberal religion have seen pull them out into new and great understandings of our faith. He smiled and nodded. That seems pretty good. I personally would have gone with the stir-fry metaphor, but you did okay. And I learned to think of our faith in different ways, but ultimately as one thing. We talked more about that. Again, the idea of the different fragrances and styles and experiences and unique taste come about together once we put it all in the same place. Out of many, one, I said. E pluribus unum. And then immediately in that moment, we went into a conversation far beyond, should you come to the school, but how do we do something together in relationship? It was no longer a question of if we would be in relationship, but how. And that statement, that phrase that has carried America throughout the centuries out of many one, was a way that I formed a relationship with others. I'm not sure if you know much about that phrase. That's not quite our motto, but on the Great Seal. In July 1776, right after signing the Declaration of Independence, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, great friends, of course, and Benjamin Franklin were tasked with designing a seal and motto for our new nation. As is often the case with heady, bright people, they could not come to one suggestion. They each submitted to a committee their own unique images. But one phrase they all agreed upon. Out of many, one. E pluribus unum, and sure enough, none of their designs were approved because someone else thought they had a better idea. But the phrase, the motto, continued. In our own lives, we have seen this in many different ways. We may not think about it, but we are the perfect human encapsulation of from many, one. From many experiences. From many places, from many family members, from many thoughts, come one. It can be interesting for us at times to think about what it is we believe in this context and who we are and how we hold that with others. Recently this week, I was talking to folks about Unitarian Universalism and about Brew, and the suggestion was made that you use are just a little independent, just a little. Thought that was pretty spot on. We like to own what we believe and not necessarily be held into belief by others. I offer this reading in part from Jay Allison. How many of you remember either from 50, 60 years ago at this point, or more recently, NPR's This I Believe series? I loved these books a few years ago, these essays and hearing it on the radio. Jay Allison, who edited that most recent version of 2006, wrote the following introduction. Beliefs are choices. No one has authority over your personal beliefs. They're only in jeopardy when you don't know what they are. Understanding your own beliefs and those of others comes through focused thought and discussion. A healthy democracy needs to communicate directly and perhaps even find common ground. He says, "This, I believe, this project is an exercise in philosophical and theological self-examination, but in a public context." Out of that, there's sort of a grassroots understanding of who we are individually and then communally. I invite you then, in this moment, to pause. To do even a momentary philosophical and theological self-examination to understand more about your beliefs so we can communicate about ours on common ground. When it comes to religion, many of us have done this before we walked in the room. How many of you feel like your theological beliefs are unique to some extent? I certainly have things that I don't find in any other religion. How have you wrestled with that over time, and how safe have we felt sharing that in the world? Many of us come to this building or to this faith knowing that this is one of the few places we can do that. We walk into a sanctuary. The political sphere might not be quite the same. That one we obviously talk about in many ways, but ultimately sometimes feel like we are alone in a world. It can be hard when we see things as tragic as the Tennessee Valley shooting or anything in this country that seems to point to how divided we are. And so we take a moment for philosophical and theological self-reflection about why we are in community, both at a level as a church and also on the national level. What is it we want to do with those around us? Are we here just to push for our own ideas and certain way forward, or are we here to create something in community? I mentioned using the State of Our Union as a topic because Tuesday night we will revisit this as a country. I don't know about you. No matter how often I watch that, I don't listen. I don't listen very well. I might get what the person is asking for. I might understand some of the logistical challenges that have come up that have hindered accomplishments or brought them forward, but I don't listen. Often the same is true, whether it's a one-on-one relationship or some other community in the world where we are so busy going and thinking about what we're looking for that we ignore the lessons and stories from others. There's a significance in naming the state of our union, whether it's individual or relational or societal, and reflecting on where we are given the actions we've taken. But we also have to go beyond that idea of talk to action so that we can always make progress. And that's part of why we come here to church, to be the place where we can imagine what actions we might take. Experiments we might endeavor when we take work into our own hands, hearts, and heads. When we pause for a moment to look back and to look around and to look ahead. We'll start as the Laozi reading that was offered does. If we want peace, if we want freedom, if we want really anything in the world, we must start within our own heart. In this moment, if you're able to get to that place, there's a question of how do you feel? Not so much physically. How is it with your soul? The many times we go through our community, our days and our community without pausing to think about that is dangerous. Once we understand a little bit more about how it is with our soul, whether we feel hopeful or dismayed or disillusioned, once we know that, we can share that. And we can listen to others, whoever they are, to make progress. So often, the times that I am unable to hear, which can be plentiful, There are times that I'm busy thinking of my own position, ready to put my hand in the air and offer my point of view, thinking it may subsume the others. Lots of us do this at different points, whether it's in our homes, at work, school, church, or in the national front. The question, moving beyond peace in our hearts and selves, is peace with one another. We've talked about that a lot this church year, especially as we looked at the difference between acceptance and tolerance. We again go to this idea of, given our great diversity, whether it's in this room, how many different theologies we have, or spiritual practices, but also in the greater world. If we look around in this moment to our country, to our hemisphere, to the world, can we say that we are at peace? How is it with the American soul? Do we tend to it? Or do we continue to work thinking we can rid ourselves of enemies by just talking and taking over? I think a few years ago in the State of the Union, when Joe Wilson shouted and interrupted kind of the process, it was a stark reminder of how far we can seem from one another. Many people thought of that as a lack of decorum. I wondered less that it was about that and more about how it was with his soul and the relationship with whoever the leaders are in our world. If we can do so derisively sneer when we say the word Democrat or Republican, if we can so ignore the Christians or the atheist among us, how is it that we are working together? Are we looking to make progress? Are we feeling bound together, a place where many different colors and experiences can make a beautiful tapestry? That's the American call and the Unitarian Universalist call. We are here to say that we may fail, both ourselves and our relationships in the world around us, but failing isn't the biggest problem. The biggest problem is indifference to our own pain and the pain of others, and not acting for something to move us beyond where we are now. We are moving in our community, both in churches and Unitarian Universalism and in the world, outside of ourselves and our own personal freedom and individual autonomy to do something bigger, something more powerful than we could ever hope for. Can only do that by making peace in our hearts, by planting the individual seed and then working to till the soil, to nurture it all together in the communal. We also then find the need to balance our freedoms and rights with what everyone else wants. And this can be hard for us in a religious community because we're not quite sure what everyone wants. We have to speak with one another with listening ears. We have to send messages not just of love me, but help me grow. Connect with me, but challenge me. In many ways, when we get into our worlds, whether here or in the internet, the virtual worlds, and we self-define and self-close off to our own news, we miss something that could help us change. The times I talk to people in our church or in the world who have a different belief than I do about how we work, how we learn, who we are, I find myself maybe not changing my point of view, but learning more about it, able to embody it with some peace, not just because I think I'm right, but the peace where two or more ideas can coexist. I recognize that what might be best for me as an individual may not be best for my community, which can be perhaps even not what's best for the world around us. I feel called to look at that. Is it about my needs, my words and my deeds, my success and my failure, or the communal whole? How does what we do in Manassas affect those who live in Montana? How does our country and how we are with the world affect generations to come? So, minister I've mentioned before, the Reverend Rebecca Parker. She tells this story. In 1976, I began a cross-country road trip on my way to seminary. She writes, I traveled with a friend. We had time, so we decided to take the back roads. And late one afternoon, we went through rural western Pennsylvania. We went down through the hill country into a valley. It had been raining hard. And as we neared a small town, we noticed blinking yellow lights cautioning us. And then the sign, road closed. "Looks like they've had a flood here," we said. Coming into town, we crossed a bridge over a wide river, and the water was high, muddy, flowing fast. Sandbags lined the roadway. Gosh, they must have had a lot of water, quite a bit of high water to contend with. That must have been a major flood. We headed out of town, following a winding country road, captivated by the evidence all around us that there had been a dramatic flood. Then we rounded a bend. And in front of us, a sheet of water covered the roadway. The water was rising fast, like a huge silver balloon being inflated before our eyes. We stopped, and we started to turn the car around. The water was rising behind us as well. Suddenly, we realized the flood hadn't happened yesterday or last week. It was happening here and now. Dry ground was disappearing fast. We hurriedly clambered out of the car and scrambled to higher ground. Soaked to the bone, we huddled under a fir tree. No longer were we lodged in our familiar vehicle. The cold water of the storm poured down on us, baptizing us into the present, a present from which we had been insulated by both our car and our misjudgments about the country we were traveling through. That story helps me think past the passive voice, the past tense of what has happened to me or to the world, to become present, to become aware of the active voice of what we do, present to this moment. It has not flooded around us in the world. It continues to do so. Whether it's in our own individual lives where there are pains that continue to flood us, whether it's in relationships with our partners, our parents, our families, our neighbors, whether it's in community, with us here in this room, Unitarian Universalists around the world, or all people, it is flooding. We look at an earth that too long has gone damaged and ignored. We look at souls just the same, that too long have gone damaged and ignored, and we wonder, how is it with the soul? Our soul, the others, the soul of the earth, and how can we make it better? And so this week, as we think of the state of our union, perhaps we start by looking internally, wrestling with whatever it is that we wrestle with, our own thoughts philosophically and theologically, as J. Allison put it, and then we can listen. Then we can be aware of what it is around us that we hope to move forward from. Sometimes we need that moment of pausing, of navel gazing, of looking and talking about it more than acting about it, so that we can do the following action. We delude ourselves sometimes when we act as though we are on our own, and that what concerns others do not concern us. We are far too connected through history and time, through the millions of tiny miracles that must line up for our birth, far too connected to pretend we live lives of isolation. Tuesday night, I, maybe you, will watch a speech. Some people will stand, some people won't. In the hours that come afterwards, there will be tracking polls of which words tested well. But the ultimate question to find the betterment of oneself in the community isn't necessarily an approval, but progress. To be in relationship with one another, to go somewhere together, to embrace the two polarities that we must balance, the individual and the communal. These are the elements of freedom and respect that I hold, not just for our country, not just for other people, but for us in this very moment. For we know that we are bound to one another. And being bound together, we have an opportunity to create miracles. Out of many, one. Despite the great differences between Virginia and Vermont, we will start to explore how we are one. Despite the great differences of theology between Christians and atheists or Buddhists and Hindus, there is unity and diversity. but only if we look at it as such. Only if we recognize that we are tied together, our realities inescapably connected. Like stars and stripes stitched onto a flag, we find ourselves stronger, more able to withstand wind and rain and storms and floods, whatever may come our way, when we remain connected to one another. We don't have to take on the other person's identity. We don't have to become them, just to live together, to share one space for all community. I invite you in this moment to pause before our closing hymn